morning. Thank you for the words of introduction. It's nice to see so many people able to take a little break from the Pesach preparations in order to engage in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that which all our preparations were all about, to reestablish ourselves and reconnect ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to relive the event that began this adventure that we call Torah Judaism. When approaching the topic of women at the Seder, at first glance, our shiur seems to be over before we even have begun. They certainly would assure that we finish on time. Although one of the primary rules regulating mitzvot, from which women are exempt, as stated in the Mishnah Kiddushin, kol mitzvah taseh she'azman grama, any positive commandment that is bound by time, or that time causes, anoshim chayavin v'noshim pituros, men are obligated and women are exempt. And although traditionally, and at least many of these mitzvot, women have often volunteered, those mitzvot which technically they are exempt from due to their time-bound nature, such as the mitzvah of blowing shofar, the mitzvah of sukkah. However, concerning the mitzvah of matzah and the other mitzvot of the Seder, the Mechaber clearly notes that these mitzvot are an exception to the general rule. If we take a look at the first source in the handout, the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo in Simen Tafai in Beis, Seif Yudalit, states explicitly, Gam Anoshim Chayavos Ba'arba Kosos, Uvachol Mitzvos Hanoagos Ba'oso Laila. Women as well as men are obligated in drinking the four cups of wine and in all the mitzvos that apply on that night, meaning the Seder night or Seder nights. The Mishnah Berurah, in expanding upon this Mechaber, explains in Sif Katan Mem Hei, we'll come back to Mem Dalet a little bit later, mitzvos hanoagos kegon matzah umoror v'amira tagoda, which basically says it all. It's a synopsis of most of the mitzvos of the night of the Seder, and as later commentaries explain, the Mishnah Berurah meant to include all of the mitzvos of the Seder. Karpas, the Hallel that comes after the meal, and of course Shulchan Aruch, which usually the women are so instrumental in preparing. On our Ashkafic plane, one would also expect that the mitzvot of the Seder should be an exception to the rule, both by passively being beneficiaries of the great divine chesed that was the Exodus, but as we shall see even later in more detail, it was women who, at least to a large extent, were the cause and the source of merit for which our ancestors left Mitzrayim. In the language of the Gemara and the Midrashim, "Bizchus nashim tzidkaniyo shebaosi adar nigalu avoseinu b'Mitzrayim," that in the merit of the righteous women present in that generation of the Exodus and before as well, our ancestors merited Yetzias Mitzrayim. So both on a halachic plane and on Ashkafic plane, one would expect, as is the ruling of the Mechaber, that women should be full active participants in the mitzvot of the Seder. Nevertheless, as we shall see throughout the course of this year, tracing through the original sources leading to this conclusion of the Shulchan Aruch sheds light not only on the nature of women's obligations in these commandments, but leads to some surprising conclusions which have ramifications not only for the mitzvot of Pesach, but for other mitzvot as well. In addition, certain situations which come up on the night of the Seder, although theoretically relevant to men as well, might present themselves to women more frequently, and therefore also should be studied. There are two mitzvot that the Gemara itself is clear about that women are obligated in. One is a mitzvah min haTorah, and that is the mitzvah of matzah. The second is a mitzvah midrabbanan, a rabbinic commandment, and that is the mitzvah of the four cups of wine. Indeed, there is a third mitzvah that the Gemara is clear, that women are also obligated in. However, that mitzvah, we are currently in a hiatus concerning that mitzvah, and we anxiously await the time when we'll be able to fulfill it again. And that is, of course, the mitzvah of the bringing of the Korban Pesach, where the Gemara makes it clear that women also must partake of this sacrifice and eating of it as well on the night of the Seder. Imagine, besides cleaning your house and buying a matzah and maror, having to take an eged bus up to the Har HaBayis as well to prepare the Korban Pesach. We think we have it hard. Concerning the mitzvah of matzah, if we take a look at source 3, the Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis, learns out from what's known as a hekesh, or two ideas that seemingly at first glance are unrelated, but the Torah places them in the same passage, and one sheds light on the other. The Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Noshim Chayavos Bachilat Matzah Dvar Torah. Women are obligated in the eating of matzah by Torah law. Shenemar, Lo Sochal Alav Chameitz, V'gomer, which is the Gemara's way of saying, etc. And the pasuk concludes, Shivas Yamim Tochal Alav Matzos. That one is not allowed to eat chametz during the 7 days of Pesach or the 8 days in Chutz La'aretz. And one should eat matzah during those 7 days. To which the Gemara comments, the fact that the Torah placed the prohibition of chametz together in the same passage as the commandment of matzah, kol sheyeshno beval tochal chametz, yeshno b'achilat matzah. All those who are obligated in the negative commandment of not eating chametz, and indeed, even though the negative commandment of against eating chametz is also time-bound, but the same Mishnah Kiddushin indicates that women are obligated in the overwhelming majority of negative commandments, regardless of whether they are time-bound or not time-bound. It's only concerning positive commandments that there's an exemption if that particular mitzvah happens to be time-bound in general. So concerning the negative commandments of not eating chametz, clearly women are obligated. So too, yeshno b'achilat matzah. The very fact that the Torah places these two mitzvahs together concludes the Gemara, v'hani nishay. So women, nami also, hol v'yeshnon b'val tochal chametz, yeshnon b'kum echol matzah, they are equally obligated in the mitzvah of matzah as well. So the Gemara, in an unambiguous fashion, states that women are obligated in the mitzvah of matzah, the mitzvah min HaTorah. Concerning the mitzvah of the 4 cups of wine, which Rabbi Daniel Feldman, Bezrat Hashem, will be addressing in a subsequent year, in a more elaborate fashion, the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuf Ches Amid Beis, starting in Amal Aleph, it's on source 4, V'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Noshim Chayavot Barboa Kosos Halalu, Sha'af Hein Hoyu Ba'oso Aneis. And one of the most famous principles that the Gemara has, especially concerning obligations of women, that women are obligated in the rabbinic commandment of the 4 cups of wine because they too were involved in the miracle. There is a dispute between Rashi on the one hand and Tosfos on the other as to whether or not by this phrase, Af Hein Hoyu Ba'oso Aneis, this refers to the fact that women were also beneficiaries of the miracle, which would be implied from the phraseology of af, that they too were part of the miracle. They too were part of the miracle of the Exodus in this case. Or, as Rashi seems to add, that they were active participants in bringing about the miracle. In the days of Hanukkah, the story of Yehudit and the general whom she succeeded in killing, which served as a partial Yeshua for Klal Yisrael. In the days of Mordechai and Esther, of course, the famous heroine Esther, who risked her life for her nation. And in the days of Yetzias Mitzrayim, as we mentioned at the beginning of this year, B'zchus Noshim Tzidkaniyo Sheba'osu Ador Nigalu Avoseinu B'Mitzrayim, that because of the vision of the women in that era, we merited the exile, that they weren't just passive participants, but active participants in bringing it about. This is a dispute between Rashi and Tosfos as to how exactly to understand this principle of Afein Hoyu Ba'oso Aneis. Nevertheless, the Gemara makes it clear that women are obligated in the 4 cups of wine because they were at least involved in that miracle. Let us try to analyze each of these in turn. The mitzvah of matzah, which women are obligated on a Torah level, and the mitzvah of the 4 cups of wine, which women are obligated on a rabbinic level, just as men are. And then, throughout the course of this year, we'll use these two prototypes, the prototype of matzah, which women are obligated on a Torah level, and the prototype of the four cups of wine, which is a rabbinic commandment that women are obligated in as well, to see how from these two mitzvos the Mechaber concluded, as we saw earlier in source one, that women are not obligated only in these two mitzvos, but in all of the mitzvos of the Seder as well. So let us begin with an analysis of the mitzvah of matzah, specifically as it applies to women. Concerning the mitzvah of matzah, on a Torah level, there is only an obligation to eat one kazayis. And as is fairly well known, a kazayis is not just the size of an olive in a linear fashion, but is the amount in volume of matzah, or as some would maintain, of the flour in the matzah, that would add up to the volume of an average olive. What is an average olive? So apparently those who have done research have, through the Olive Society, have discovered that nowadays there are approximately 7 to 9 types of olives, and usually we follow the Benoni size, and the Benoni size is somewhere around 1 fluid ounce. In the night of the Seder, though, there are additional rabbinic enhancements besides the Torah commandment itself. And there are 3 times in the night of the Seder that we fulfill something having to do with eating matzah. The first is, of course, using the simonim of the Seder, Kardesh Urchatz, Karpas Yachatz. No, I will not perform my musical rendition of that. Motzi Matzah. The first, right after we wash, the Shulchan Orech, after the first part of the Haggadah, is the mitzvah of eating matzah, which according to most Rishonim is the actual fulfillment of the Torah commandment. But then we fulfill the eating of matzah in 2 other ways as well. One is with the korech, or the sandwich of the maror, the romaine lettuce, or the horseradish, and the matzah. Interestingly, as has been pointed out, it was the idea of a sandwich was probably invented by the Earl of Sandwich in the medieval ages, a famous gambler who didn't have time to eat, so he used to put meat and bread. So some suggested that the korech originally was either something like the Sephardic kind of matzah, which was more like a pita, where they used to make something like the equivalent of what we call a wrap, or perhaps even the wrapping of the lettuce around the matzah. It's kind of hard to make a sandwich which are matzah, which is crackers, but nonetheless, we get by. This is the mitzvah of korech. And that, as is fairly well known, as we say in the Haggadah itself, is a zecher l'migdash kehillel. That Hillel maintained that we fulfill the mitzvah of matzah and maror together, at least in the times of the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, even though we don't paskin like Hillel, and also nowadays, since the mitzvah of maror is only a rabbinic commandment, so we don't want to mix the rabbinic commandment with the Torah commandment, so we eat the matzah separately, the maror separately, but we create a reminder of what used to be done in the Beit HaMikdash according to Hillel, and therefore we combine both together. The third time we fulfill something having to do with matzah is, of course, the afikoman, which is at the end of Shulchan Orech, where for dessert, which is what the word afikoman itself means, we have a piece of matzah. As the poskim indicate, women are chayiv in all three, even though the original source for women being obligated is the Torah commandment of matzah, but nonetheless, we assume that the rabbinic enhancements of the mitzvah of matzah, both the mitzvah of korech, which is a zecher for what was done in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, according to Hillel, and the afikoman, which, simply speaking, is a reminder of the Korban Pesach, which we no longer have, and we substitute the matzah instead as a reminder, that women are obligated in these as well. How much must be eaten at each of these 3 occasions? So, strictly speaking, 1 kazayis each time. How much is the kazayis? So I know I had the opportunity of spending quite a few siddurim at the house of my father-in-law, Shlita Rabbi Handel, who many of you know as a student either from Azrieli Graduate School or from Stern College. So he used to give out a whole shmur matzah plus more for the mitzvah of matzah. But let's just say that's a little bit on the machmir side. And consequently, as we said before, that if all we're looking for is really the size of 1 fluid ounce, even if you go by ground-up matzah, which in and of itself is a chumrah, because it could be that you're able to count the air spaces, so the Chazon Ish pointed out that the size of kazayis of matzah is somewhere around the size of the palm. Sometimes you can get away with just the size here, and the chumrah you can count the whole hand. Practically speaking, what that means is on a machine shmur matzah, preferably in the night of the Seder. One should use strictly shmur matzah for the least of the mitzvahs of the Seder. So somewhere between a quarter to a half of a machine shmur matzah is a kazayis. Concerning a hand shmur matzah, usually they're slightly bigger. So again, it's somewhere between. You can get away probably a little less, but also a third, a slightly less than a third, to a half. Even though it'll be depending on the size of the machine shmura, of the hand shmura, excuse me, it'll be slightly less than the parallel in a square machine matzah. However, for a variety of reasons, which the scope of this more abbreviated shiur doesn't allow us to enter into, the poskim recommend that for the first kazayis of motzi matzah, that one should really have two kazayisim. And for afikoman, also, preferably, one should have two kazayisim. For korech, though, one only has to have one kazayis. However, the later poskim point out that since this is really only an additional stringency, and it's not really part of the ikar hadin, the strict halacha, therefore one could be lenient in how much we consider to be a kazayis. So again, leaving aside the complex math, what would emerge is that two kazayisim by a lenient standard is going to be approximately the same as one kazayis by a stricter standard. So therefore, even if one wants to fulfill the mahadrin form, if you will, of the mitzvah of matzah, so therefore one should eat perhaps a little more than a half of a matzah, a little less if one is eating a machine shmur, hand shmur matzah, excuse me, because those are bigger, even to fulfill the mitzvah of mahadrin. But what if one is having difficulty with eating matzah? This, of course, could come up in any health-related issue. It could also come up, especially during pregnancy and the issues of morning sickness, etc. So one might have to get by with a minimal amount of matzah. So therefore, one need not be machmir to insist upon having the full two kazayisim. And if one can, one should preferably eat at least one kazayis each for the mitzvah of motzi matzah, the mitzvah of korech, and the mitzvah of afikoman, which, as we said, is approximately a quarter to a third of a matzah. Usually that's not too difficult, even for someone who's having issues in terms of what they could eat. An interesting leniency that is not mentioned by the Shulchan Aruch, but I ran it by some of my Rebbeim, and they agreed that this is something that certainly can be relied upon, that if one is having difficulty swallowing the matzah, so one could drink water while one is swallowing the matzah. Indeed, we're not supposed to eat anything else that would detract from the flavor of matzah while we're eating the matzah, which is why nowadays, especially, even Hillel would agree that one could not fulfill the mitzvah of matzah in a sandwich-like fashion, because nowadays the mitzvah of matzah is min ha-Torah, it's a biblical commandment. The mitzvah of maror, nowadays, is only a rabbinic commandment. And the reason for that is because the Torah only mentions the commandment to eat maror in conjunction with the Korban Pesach. Since we no longer have a Korban Pesach nowadays, so therefore the mitzvah of maror only serves as a reminder of what we used to do when there was a Korban Pesach. Matzah, though, although the Torah also states concerning the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, al matzos umarorim yochluhu, but it also mentions the mitzvah of matzah in a separate context, bo erev tochlu matzos. So therefore, the mitzvah of matzah is not dependent on the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, and therefore nowadays it remains a biblical commandment. The mitzvah of maror is only a rabbinic commandment. So therefore, we don't combine matzah and maror nowadays, because as the Gemara indicates, that would be a problem of something which on a Torah level doesn't really belong here. So that is mevatel, or nullifies, the flavor of matzah. So therefore, if one would put matzah in their mouth, and let's say chew on some parva ice cream also, or jump the gun and eat some of the soup or the meat of the night of the Seder, so that would not enable someone to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah properly. But water is tasteless. It doesn't have a unique flavor. So therefore, one wouldn't apply this idea of the water being mevatel, the flavor of matzah, because it has no flavor. So if one has difficulty in swallowing the matzah, certainly one could drink a little bit of water as necessary. Another halacha that comes up in sometimes non-ideal situations, which we all have to deal with, and sometimes especially women in this regard, is the halacha of interruption. Lecha chila, one should not interrupt, really, from the time that the one who is leading the Seder recites the brachos on Hamotzi Lechem and Oretz and Al Achilat Matzah, all the way till the end of the eating of the Korech sandwich. And why is that? Because Korech is really like a joint mitzvah. It's a combination of matzah and maror. And even though it's only a rabbinic remembrance of what was done in the times of the Beis Hamikdash according to Hillel, but nonetheless, we want that to the extent possible to plug in to the brachos that we made on the mitzvah of matzah, which is al achilat matzah, and the mitzvah of maror, which is al achilat maror, because we're eating the maror and the matzah again. So therefore, ideally, one should try to avoid interruptions from the time that one sits down to hear the leader recite Hamotzi Lechem and Oretz and Al Achilat Matzah, followed by the Al Achilat Maror till the end of the Korech. But that is not always practical. Sometimes between the Matzah and the Maror, so Shimon decides to pour the Charoset on Chana. And sometimes Chana decides to pull Moshe's hair. What then? And sometimes the doesn't quite do it. So therefore it's important to know the strict halacha as to what happens if one has to interrupt, does one have to or not have to recite the bracha again. So the basic halacha is that as long as the bracha has taken effect, even on a little mashu, so for example, if one heard the bracha of Al Achilat Matzah following the bracha of Hamotzi Lechem and Oretz, and as long as they bit into a little bit of matzah, and they had to interrupt in order to stop some fight or some other pressing need, so then they could resume the fulfillment of the mitzvah even without reciting a new bracha, because the bracha already took effect. Nonetheless, as it's very well known, one really shouldn't drag out the eating of the matzah for half an hour. One is supposed to eat it in a normal fashion, the normal amount of time that it would take to eat a kazayis, which the postim call the idea of kidei achilas pras, which is somewhere between 2 and 9 minutes. So, depending on one's eating habits, the postim writes one should try to eat the kazayis of matzah in four minutes, which is not, if you're trying to eat a gigantic shmur matzah, the way I was given, in 4 minutes, so it's going to take a lot of effort. But as the post can point out, the more machmir you are in the shiurim, the more time you have to eat it. You're supposed to just eat it in a normal way. But if just eating the shear of matzah, so one could usually get away with eating it in 4 minutes, but if that's not possible, so as much as 9 minutes. What if one had to interrupt, but they already had a crumb of matzah? So then one should resume the eating of the matzah when they're able to, and then try to eat a kazayis from the time they're able to sit down with somewhat peace before the next fight, and eat it at least in the shear of 4 minutes, preferably, and if not, 9 minutes. The same thing is true concerning the mitzvah of eating maror, which although we're not going to address fully in this morning's shir, but women are obligated to maror as well. And the same halacha supply, that if they had an opportunity to even eat a small bite of maror, so the mitzvah already began, and therefore they would not have to repeat the bracha again if they had to interrupt. When they come back, they should make sure to eat a kazayis of maror in an uninterrupted fashion. All the more so concerning the mitzvah of Korech, that if one had to interrupt between the mitzvah of Matzah and the mitzvah of Maror before Korech, so since Korech is only a Zecher L'Migdash, so there for sure we would not recite a separate bracha on that. Sometimes though a situation could arise where one has to interrupt between the bracha of Al Achilat Matzah and the eating of even a Karam. Sometimes unpleasant, but especially, to speak from personal experience, not such personal experience, but at least from experience of my wife, sometimes one feels a little queasy, and especially in the early months of pregnancy. So sometimes one might have to run out after the bracha and before they ate. So that bracha was not effective, but there's an easy solution when the person comes back. So they should recite the bracha on their own, two brachas, Hamotzi Lechem and Oretz, and an Al Achilas Matzah. So if there was an interruption between the bracha and any of the eating, the bracha has to be recited again. But if there was an interruption between the partial eating and the complete eating, so then one need not repeat the bracha. There is a not so pleasant shaila, but nonetheless, halacha has to cover all areas of the Seder. So again, getting back to situations where people are feeling a little bit queasy. So people will laugh, but nonetheless, this is part of the halachic system. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank addresses the issue, even though he wasn't specifically referring to women, but just from experience, it could apply more to women than to men. What happens if one throws up the contents of what they just ate? They throw off the matzah, they throw off the morah. So sometimes it could happen when people are a little bit too machmer in the shurim and they eat a little bit too much horseradish. So that's you have to be very careful about that. The post can point out that since morah is only a rabbinic commandment nowadays, one could be lenient as to what's considered a kazayas. One could get away with even less than an ounce. Even 2/3 of an ounce is good, approximately 0.7 ounces. Clearly one shouldn't load up on horseradish if it's going to lead to danger. Sometimes there are situations where people have to have a rushed away to the hospital. And now, Baruch Hashem, we have bug-free romaine lettuce. Used to be from Gush Katif. And now the courageous farmers of Gush Katif have relocated to other areas of Eretz Yisrael and still producing that bug-free lettuce. But in any case, what if someone was not able to maintain the contents of the seder, shall we say, inside their stomach? So Rav Pesach Frank writes that unlike the mitzvah of Birchat HaMazon, which is v'achalta v'savata v'irachta, you have to be satisfied. So if you, shall we say, exgest the contents of the meal, so one doesn't bench unless one could be reasonably certain that there's a kazayas left in the stomach. But the mitzvah of achilat matzah is to eat matzah. So eat we did, even if it comes out. So that's a somewhat unpleasant halacha, but sometimes halacha l'maisa. I want you to keep in mind that one need not eat the matzah again, even if it didn't stay down. Okay. Let's move on now to the mitzvah of dalet kosos. As we saw before from the Gemara, women are obligated in the mitzvah of dalet kosos based on afein hoya boso anes. What kind of wine should be used in fulfillment of the mitzvah of dalet kosos? What emerges from the Gemara in Psachim, Daf Kuf Ches Amid Beis, and this is something we briefly have in the sources here on number 5. Shison bevasachas ravam or yidei yayin yotza yidei arba kosis lo yotza. If you drink the 4 cups of wine one after another, Bori Pri Agafen, 1, 2, 3, 4. Instead of the way we do it, where we first have one cup after Kiddush, one cup after the first half of the Seder, one cup after Birchas HaMazon, and the final cup after the Halil. But what if one drinks them one after another? So Rav is of the opinion, and this is what's accepted in Shulchan Aruch, that is not a fulfillment of the mitzvah of the 4 cups of wine. One would have to drink 3 other cups again in the right time. But Yidei Yai in Yotza. But they have fulfilled their obligation of wine. What is this obligation of wine? Isn't that the obligation of the 4 cups? Isn't that the same thing? So the Rishonim, the early authorities and commentaries on the Gemara, as well as the Achronim explain, and this is based on a similar Gemara as well, that there are really 3 separate commandments or rabbinic ideas that we fulfill by drinking the 4 cups of wine. One is the regular mitzvah of Simchas Yamtis. It's a mitzvah to be happy on Yamtis. And as the Pasuk in Baruch Hinafshi indicates, Yayin Yisamach Levavenosh, that wine is a source of joy. Some people unfortunately use wine as a little bit too much source of joy. But it creates a state of simcha, a state of happiness. There's another mitzvah inherent within the wine on the Seder night, which is not just relevant to any Yom Tov, but specifically to the night of Pesach, and that's the idea of cheirus, of acting like free people. Free people eat lavishly, which is why, as is well known, certainly in the times of the Gemara, and according to most authorities, this applies nowadays as well, even though it's not so common outside of the Seder, that we lean the way wealthy people would when they eat the mitzvah of Heseba. We try to make sure that the Seder night is full of luxury, that all of the silver should be on the table, as many Gedolei Yisrael had to practice that during the year. They were very humble in terms of the way they set the table. When it came to the night of the Seder, everything was malchustic, was very regal. To recognize the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu transformed us from a nation of slaves to a nation of B'nai Melachim, of princes and sons of princes, and ultimately gave us the crowning glory of our kingship, namely the Torah Kedosha. So therefore, we celebrate by drinking things that would symbolize this idea of freedom. So we drink wine. Then there's a separate commandment of Arboa Kosos, of having 4 cups of wine, specifically at certain junctures throughout the Seder. As we said before, after Kiddush, after Agoda, etc. So there are really three separate ideas that we fulfill by drinking the cups of wine. One is the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, the regular mitzvah of joy on Yom Tov. One is the mitzvah of Cheirus, of demonstrating that we're acting as free men or women. And the third is the specific mitzvah of Dalet Kosos, that each section of the Agoda is arranged on a cup of wine. Much like we say Kiddush on a cup of wine, so we say the Agoda on a cup of wine. Which of these threefold components of the mitzvah, the four cups of wine, are women obligated in? So on the very same page of the Gemara indicates that what is Simchas Yom Tov all about? How do you fulfill it nowadays? So in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, we would bring karbanos in order to fulfill Simchas Yom Tov. Karbanos called Shalmei Simcha. Nowadays, we no longer have karbanos. So therefore, the Gemara indicates that concerning men, they fulfill the mitzvah of Simcha by drinking more wine than they usually would during the year. Concerning women, the mitzvah is that they should be able to receive and wear fancy clothing. Tell that to your husbands and parents. Which is probably the basis of the common Minhag Yisrael, to buy new clothes before Yom Tov. Does that mean that men don't dress in fancy clothing on Yom Tov? Of course not. But that one of the ways in which they fulfill Simchas Yom Tov, in addition to that, is through the drinking of wine. But the implication of the Gemara is that the drinking of wine was not really designated for women to fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. Maybe because it wasn't so common for women to drink wine as much as it was as common for men to drink it, or for whatever reason. But the clear implication of the Gemara is that women don't really fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov by drinking wine. So therefore, the sefer called Harei Kodesh, which is Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank's son, I forget his first name, but he wrote a commentary on his father's work. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was a famous rabbi of Yerushalayim about 30, 40 years ago, published a very popular sefer on the Moedim called Mikroi Kodesh, and he addresses the topic, as we'll see in a moment, of using grape juice for the four cups of wine. And his son points out in a footnote that one of the things that emerges from the analysis of his father is that maybe, since women are not necessarily obligated in Simchas Yom Tov, Simchas Yom Tov is presumably only brought about by the drinking of some kind of alcoholic beverages, because that brings about a certain state of Simcha. But drinking grape juice, so people like grape juice, so you're supposed to drink that which you like and eat that which you like on any Shabbos and Yom Tov. But it doesn't appear to have any specific nature to Simchas Yom Tov, though. So therefore, the Harei Kodesh suggests that maybe women should really not prefer wine over grape juice on the night of the Seder, which touches upon the following interesting analysis that's relevant to men as well. All things being equal, if people could tolerate wine, and they like wine, if they enjoy wine, the Poskim write that if people have an abhorrence to wine, so they shouldn't drink wine, because you're supposed to enjoy the Seder, so you should drink grape juice. But let's say you like wine. So Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, as well as other poskim, were of the opinion that wine is preferable to grape juice. And even though, all things being equal, it'll probably make you a little more drowsy, and you'll probably fall asleep a little earlier than ordinary circumstances, and even though it's a mitzvah to stay up as late as you can the night of the Seder, but nonetheless, this is the preferable. And why is that? So Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests, because the mitzvah of four cups of wine is not just to have four cups of things that are called wine, but also to fulfill the mitzvah of Simcha and to fulfill the mitzvah of Cheirus, of showing that you're acting as a free man. On Queen Elizabeth's table, they don't serve grape juice as a sign of a regal meal. They serve wine. So wine is preferable. Not everyone agreed with that approach of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal, as well as other poskim as well, were of the opinion that grape juice is on equal footing with wine. You fulfill the mitzvah just as much with grape juice as with wine. If we should go with the approach of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, that wine is preferable, is it preferable for women? So this is what we pointed out earlier, that the Harei Kodesh, the son of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, suggests that maybe women don't have to be particular concerning the drinking of wine, because the Gemara implies that the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov is fulfilled in a different way concerning women than it is for men, and it's not through wine. One could debate this analysis of the Harei Kodesh, because after all, the mitzvah of drinking wine is not only because of Simcha, but it's also because of Cheirus, demonstrating that you're acting as free people, and as kings and queens would eat. So here, one could make the case that queens also drink wine. If one should insist that the queens don't drink as much wine as the kings do, so one could suggest that maybe women shouldn't be particular concerning wine. It certainly is the common practice, as I've seen, that usually it's more common for women to use grape juice than it is for men. As we pointed out, that common practice has a solid basis in halacha, although it certainly would be preferable, since some poskim would maintain that women also should prefer wine, to at least drink a low-alcohol wine, if possible, on the night of the Seder, in order to enhance the mitzvah of cheres. An important halacha, which we're not going to address fully, but we'll at least touch upon, is sometimes, again, due to tolerance issues, people cannot drink wine, and sometimes they can't even drink grape juice. So a halacha that's important to keep in mind is, at least for Ashkenazim, I'm not 100% familiar with the Sephardi Psak, although I'll say it briefly, and I'll ask you to consult if it's relevant to halacha, is that from the Ashkenazi perspective, we consider wine to be wine, even if it's diluted, by as much as five parts wine. Let me rephrase that, five parts water and one part wine or one part grape juice. In other words, if there's a ratio of 1 to 5 between the water and the wine or the grape juice. So even if one cannot get away with drinking a full cup of grape juice, but usually one could get away with drinking a diluted cup of grape juice. So if that's the case, then one should fulfill it in that way, by diluting it as much as necessary, provided that one at least has 1/6 of it being grape juice. I believe the Sephardi Psak is you have to have a majority of wine. So certainly, lechachila, one should try to have a majority of the wine or the grape juice if one has to dilute it. If one wants to fulfill the enhancement of drinking wine on the night of the Seder, then one could also mix wine and grape juice if one can't really tolerate wine in a similar type of proportion. Concerning some of the specifics of how we fulfill the mitzvah of Dalet Kotzos, so we know that the first cup of wine is the mitzvah of Kiddush. Normally, when one recites Kiddush, so one holds the cup of wine. Now, the common practice is that usually either the leader of the Seder or all the men who are at the Seder will make Kiddush on their own and they will hold the cup of wine. But what is not so common is that all the assembled hold the cup of wine. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Zatzal, one of the chief poskim of Eretz Yisrael, who passed away about 15 years ago or so, as well as other poskim as well, are of the opinion that it's really proper, since all of the mitzvos of the Seder were arranged on these cups. And since women are equally obligated in those cups, so they should also hold the cup of wine at the appropriate time. So that the women should hold their cup of wine that's before them when the Mekadesh, or the one who's making Kiddush, is reciting the Kiddush. Because it's as if they also are reciting the Kiddush through the halachic principle of Shomea Ka'ona, that he who hears is as he who recited it. So they are reciting Kiddush. So if they're reciting Kiddush and they're obligated to drink that wine also, unlike on Shabbos and Yom Tov, where it's only preferable that all of the assembled should have a sip of the Kiddush wine, but there's no obligation for them to drink the cup. But on the night of the Seder, there's an obligation for the women as well to drink the four cups of wine. So, as such, they preferably should hold the cup of wine at the appropriate time. So they're in Kiddush to elevate the cup of wine in their hands. Some people have to practice to recite Kiddush sitting down, so elevate it in a sitting fashion. Some have to practice to recite it standing up. It's a dispute in the poskim as to exactly how much of the cup one must drink in order to fulfill the mitzvah. So lichachila, one should really try to drain the cup, to drink all of it, kol hakos. But the strict halacha is only that one has to drink the majority. The majority of what? The majority of the whole cup? Or the majority of just the minimum amount that has to be in the cup? So the minimum amount that has to be in the cup is 3 ounces, which is the revius. Some say 3.3 ounces. So since this is a dispute, whether it's a majority of the cup or a majority of just the 3 ounces, which is approximately 1.6 ounces, so someone who doesn't really have such a great tolerance for either wine or even grape juice, so one shouldn't use a gigantic cup on the night of the Seder. One should use a cup that holds at least 3 ounces. If it holds exactly 3 ounces, usually a little difficult because it's hard to fill it all the way to the tippy top all the time. So it should hold a little more than 3 ounces, or preferably a little more than 3.3 ounces. So that even if one cannot drain the cup, one should be able to drink a majority of that, which will be the equivalent of a revius. Some people have the practice, especially for women, that when they drink the cups of wine, they only take a sip. So unless the person has an aversion to grape juice totally, so really that's not the proper practice. One should try to drink at least the majority of a revius, which is about not so much, 1.6 ounces, for each of the four cups of wine. An issue that sometimes comes up sometimes for men as well, but again, sometimes for women, especially in pregnancy or when nursing, that one can't really last without taking some food or some drink till the Seder. Sometimes, especially if the children came home with lots of Divrei Torah and the husband has Divrei Torah and the wife also has Divrei Torah to share. So by the time you're sitting down to Shulchan Aruch, it could be an hour and a half. So sometimes there's a need to eat. So if a woman needs to eat or a man needs to eat, should they rush through the Seder in order to get to the meal, or is there another halachically acceptable solution? So the poskim indicate that water is for sure permissible. It's not such a well-known halacha, but that one recites Bari Pir Gafen on the first cup of wine of Kiddush, and will end very soon, and one should have in mind when one recites the Bari Pir Gafen that it should be going on the water too, and that one could drink water in between. What if the water is not going to quite cut it? So one could drink other liquids too. One should avoid drinking extra grape juice. One should avoid drinking extra wine, because you're not supposed to give off the appearance as if you're adding to the 4 cups of wine. But certainly non-alcoholic beverages could be drunk as well. What if that's not going to satisfy the hunger need? So strictly speaking, one could really eat before the Seder as well, after Kiddush. One could have a bowl of soup. One could have a fruit. Now normally we try to avoid that because we show our chavivos, our love for mitzvos, by having the first thing that we eat is mitzvos matzah. But when necessary, if there's a case of hunger, so one could eat before the beginning of the formal Shulchan Aruch. Concerning the mitzvah of Haggadah, and as the time is short, we're not going to go through the sources inside, but they're laid out in from source 6 and on. The Gemara does not state explicitly whether or not women are obligated in the mitzvah of Haggadah, or the mitzvah that's referred to as Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Indeed, the Sefer HaChinuch, this you have in source 6, we'll just see one line at the end of source 6, Mitzvah Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you look at the end of that paragraph, Vinoheges b'scharem unakevos b'chol makom v'chol zman v'over aleha b'tel aseh. That the mitzvah of reciting the story of the Exodus applies equally as well to men as to women. The Minchat Chinuch, which is a commentary on the Sefer HaChinuch was in the times of the early authorities, the Rishonim. The Minchat Chinuch lived about 500 or so years later. He notes that the implication of the Rambam seems to be otherwise, that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Haggadah. Because the Rambam has a list of how many exceptions to the rule of time-bound mitzvos that women are nonetheless obligated in, and he lists the mitzvah of Kiddush on Friday night, he lists the mitzvah of Matzah, but he does not list the mitzvah of Haggadah. So the silent implication of the Rambam is that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Haggadah. Nonetheless, a careful reading of the Rambam seems to indicate that he himself agrees that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Haggadah as well. And if we take a look very quickly in source 9, which is the Rambam's list of those mitzvot which apply most frequently. And of the 248 positive commandments, he points out that the ones that apply most frequently are a total of 60. So if we look, it's kind of an interesting source here. You see, it's what was bolded, Ha'asiris ein anoshim chayavos ba. Ha'achasisrei v'higamkein ein anoshim chayavos ba. What is the 10th and the 11th mitzvah? So I believe it's the mitzvah of tefillin and the mitzvah of tzitzis. But if we go further down, it's also bolded, V'ha kuf nun zayin, the 157th mitzvah. That happens to be the mitzvah of telling over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of the Seder. What doesn't the Rambam say when he lists that mitzvah? That women are exempt. So the implication of this Rambam is that women are obligated. But why should they be obligated in the mitzvah of Haggadah? After all, it's a time-bound commandment. And it's not like the mitzvah of matzah that has an explicit, what we call a ribuy from the fact that women are not allowed to eat chametz, they have to eat matzah. So what will be the source? So there are a variety of approaches that are advanced by the Rishonim and the Achronim as to why women should be obligated in Haggadah. One approach is that Pesach is a package deal. You see from the fact that the Torah obligates women in matzah, that the Torah is interested in obligating women in the totality of the mitzvot that apply during the Seder. Not only matzah, but all the mitzvot as well. A different approach that's taken by the later authorities is just like women are obligated to drink the four cups of wine because of Afein Hoyo Ba'oso Hanes, they were involved in the miracle, so too they're obligated in telling over the story of the miracle. What might be a difference between those two approaches if we take the package deal approach or the prototype of the four cups of wine? Well, if we take the package deal approach that all the mitzvahs of the Seder apply equally well to men and women, it should follow that they're obligated on a Torah level. But if we take the approach of Afein Hoyo Ba'oso Hanes, well, it could be that principle only applies on a rabbinic level. So maybe women are only obligated in the Haggadah on a rabbinic level. What would be the difference? Either way, they have to hear the Haggadah or have to say the Haggadah. Parenthetically, if the poskim indicates, one need not necessarily say the Haggadah. One could hear the Haggadah as well as another way of fulfilling it. So the general rule is that in order to be motzi someone, in order to exempt someone else's obligation, so you have to be equally obligated. So that's why, for example, technically speaking, a woman could not blow shofar for a man, because they're not on the same level of obligation. A man is obligated to blow shofar, a woman is only volunteering. So what about on the night of the Seder? Let's say one has a situation where for whatever reason the woman has to lead the Seder, and she has children who, let's say, are above bar mitzvah. So can she lead the Seder and be motzi them if necessary? So here the post can point out that since it's a dispute whether they're obligated on a Torah level or rabbinic level, so it's preferable for them not to exempt someone else in the Seder, that they should say it themselves, rather than only hearing it from a woman. There is a minority opinion that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of Haggadah at all, that they just serve as well as the small children. Small children are not obligated certainly not on a Torah level in Haggadah, but nonetheless, the main mitzvah of Haggadah is Vigadat Levincha. So as the Sefer HaChinuch writes, it's incumbent to tell over the story of the Exodus to your household. So even if one should insist that women are exempt from the Haggadah, but they still have to be at the Seder table in order to participate in that experience. But the consensus opinion in the poskim is that women are not only obligated to be there to be part of the storytelling, but that they are equally obligated in the Haggadah itself. So if women have to, for whatever reason, either single women or women whose husband is not around, so they are obligated to recite the Haggadah as well. Let me just conclude, because the time is a little bit late, that women are equally obligated, as we assume, in the mitzvah of Hallel as well, on the night of the Seder. Interestingly, the poskim assume that Hallel, the rest of the year, on Yom Tov and on Rosh Chodesh, women are exempt, because it's a time-bound commandment, and there is no specific exception to the rule for that. But on the night of the Seder, all the poskim agree that women are obligated in the Hallel. And why is that? So the Brisker Rav Zatzal explains very beautifully, and if one takes a careful look at the Haggadah, it seems to say it explicitly. We say toward the end of the first section of the Haggadah, "B'chol dor v'dor chayev adam liros esatzmo ki lehu yotzim imitzrayim." In every generation, a person is supposed to view themselves as if they went out of Mitzrayim. "Lifichach chayavim anachnu lahodos lahalel l'shabeach l'foer." Therefore, we have to praise the Kadosh Baruch Hu. How does that follow? So the Brisker Rav Zatzal explains so beautifully that on the night of the Seder, we are not just praising God for miracles that have occurred. We are praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Yetzias Mitzrayim that we ourselves have just undergone. We are singing Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just like our ancestors did, both in Mitzrayim and also at Kriyas Yamsuf. So that kind of commandment, to express Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time of a miracle, is equally incumbent upon men as it is for women. And this last idea, leading us to our conclusion, explains why it is that the consensus of the poskim is that really women are chayiv in the totality of the mitzvot of the Seder. And according to the Rambam and others as well, women are obligated on a Torah level in all of the mitzvot of the Seder. And why should that be? As we mentioned beforehand, Afein Hoyo Ba'oso Hanes, as explained by Rashi, is that women were not just passive participants of the Exodus, but they were the ones who caused it. And it was the vision and the support of the women, both in Yetzias Mitzrayim, as throughout the ages, that have carried Klal Yisrael throughout the eras. In the words of Rabbeinu Yonah, just to end with a beautiful quote, in the Igeres HaTshuva, he writes and notes the fact Kosomer lebeis Yaakov v'sagei lebnei Yisrael. That when the Bnei Yisrael and the Bnos Yisrael were at Har Sinai, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu addresses the women first. First he refers to Beis Yaakov, and only then does he refer to the Bnei Yisrael. And why is that? So Rabbeinu Yonah writes so beautifully that it is because of the primary responsibility in women in raising their children and providing and implanting Yira Shemayim at a tender young age, that they are the ones who allow Klal Yisrael to continue. So before Kadosh Baruch Hu addressed the men, he first wanted to address the women. And indeed, as Rabbi Arlovsky in a separate context noted, that it is women who are blessed with the ability to see beyond the tragedy, to be able to look into the future of Geula. And perhaps that is why, as the famous Medrash indicates, that when the Jewish men in Mitzrayim were about to give up hope, and they didn't want to produce families anymore, as is the case concerning Amram, and it was only through Miriam's prodding that he remarried his wife Yocheved, that they're able to see there'll be better times. There'll be a time when Geula will occur. Even though now things look miserable, as if there's no hope, but nonetheless, just have bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we will survive. So it's certainly not surprising that women are full participants in reliving the Exodus and reliving Yetzias Mitzrayim and in performing the various mitzvot that allow us to reenact that great event. Chag Kosher v'Sameach to one and all.